This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Welcome to the September 4th, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Dale Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and on this week's edition of the podcast, we are going to preview Saturday's UFC 242. Of course, remember, that is a early start time of a pay-per-view start time of 2 p.m. each time. We'll talk about the main event between Khabib Nurmagomedov and Dustin Poirier. Talk about fights outside of the main event and co-main event that do interest us. Also, we'll talk about the underdog that has the best shot to win. And also, we're going to recap last week's UFC Fight Night card there in China, where we saw Weili Zhang win the Women's Strawweight Championship with a 42-second knockout win. We'll also talk about some of our other takeaways from the event. We're going to preview Bellator 226 and tell you about how Scott Coker is definitely tempting the MMA gods. Plus, we'll talk about some MMA news and notes, including Chris Cyborg signing with Bellator. Plus, going to have three interviews for you. You're going to hear my conversations with Peter Barrett, TJ Brown, and Adam Borax, of course. And also, during this week's episode of the AmeriPort podcast, we're going to tell you about special offers that Roman and my bookie have for our listeners. Daniel, it is fight week. It is finally a Khabib Nurmagomedov fight week. Are you jacked up for this one, man?
Oh, of course, man. This is absolutely a talker, is how I would describe it. It's the one where all your friends who are casual mixed martial arts fans are popping you those questions and talking to you about the big time fight. Even though this card isn't deep like a triple layer pizza, a deep dish pizza, it's nice, man. It's like a hot, delicious, medium rare steak. And that steak is Khabib versus Dustin Poirier, man. I mean, it's just good to see Khabib Nurmagomedov back in the cage again, because this guy was kind of like a supernova star the last time we saw him. He burnt out because he got in a brawl or whatever after the fight. But he was like a big time star headed into that Conor fight, and even after. And I think people wanted to banish him for like 7 years away from the sport. They were done with him. He was so disrespectful to the sport or whatever. And now he's back, and I'm ready to see him fight, man. I mean, Khabib is absolutely one of the top stars in the UFC, and he's going up against a very, 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 very tough opponent in Dustin Poirier. And I think you either love or hate Khabib. And if you hate him, you have a guy you can absolutely root for and a dynamic opponent in Dustin Poirier, Jason.
You know, I mentioned the fact of this pay-per-view, 2 p.m. Eastern time, watching college football all last weekend on the various ESPN channels. Those ads were all over the place, even on Monday night's game. Kurt Herbstreit even talking about Khabib Nurmagomedov, of course. Something to note, the TV prelims are on FX at 12 p.m. Eastern time. For those who may not be aware, FX is actually now a Disney company, which, by the way, speaking of FX, I got up a little early this morning, Daniel, as in I could not sleep. So I was up at 3 a.m. and I was watching the season 2 debut of Mayans FC, and Mike Beltran, the referee, has a role now on that show.
What the hell is Mayans FC?
It's a spinoff of Sons of Anarchy.
Is it football club?
No, motorcycle club.
I mean,
you've Mike, never watched Sons of Anarchy?
No, man. I have both my rows of teeth, and I haven't lost any teeth yet.
I'm telling you, one of the greatest shows that has been made. I'm telling you.
You sound like my dad. You like NCIS.
It's not on Netflix anymore. Because it's obviously going on what's going on with the Disney Plus thing. But yeah, if you get a chance, you got to watch Sons of Anarchy. That, like, look, when I'm thinking about some of the greatest series I've ever watched, Sons of Anarchy's up there. Sopranos is up there. Like, please tell me you've watched Sopranos.
No, I haven't seen that one either.
Oh my God, Jesus!
I mean, that one, I believe is good. Sons of Anarchy. I mean, you sound like my dad telling me you got to check out
Sons of Anarchy. It's a mob show. Let's just call it what it is. That's what it is. It's a motorcycle mob. That's what it is. You got to watch it, man. I'm telling you.
Okay, I'm just hating.
I cannot believe.
I'm watching QB1 Beyond the Light. That's what I'm watching on Netflix.
I actually just started watching season 1 of that the other day.
You too. That's what I'm watching, man. It's a wonder Tate Martell is in a starting quarterback.
Oh, good Lord. Like, now he's already at his second school, and now he's not even a quarterback. He's a wide receiver because he couldn't beat out a freshman in Miami. Like, I was like, because I saw that come up like in my recommendations on Netflix. I'm like, oh, okay, let me start back season one. And season one was Jake Fromm, who's now at Georgia, Tate Martell. And like, it's one of those shows that, man, Ohio State had to see that show and go, ooh, we might be getting in the wrong business here.
Mm-hmm. They I'm sure they did, and man, this show is so watchable. It's like, why the hell can't MMA produce something like this? I guess it's because like high school football is like, you know, it's unparalleled. But it's like, I'm digging this, man. Like, reality show based programming is like, it's like peanut butter, man. Like how the UFC hasn't sold a show to Netflix is 100% beyond me. If you can sell a show that goes viral like The Ultimate Fighter, but on Netflix, because it's a good show that people want to watch, like, dude, that is amazing. Because like, I'm watching this show and I'm invested in the characters and stuff. So there's my hat tip for the UFC or Bellator.
No, it's
put together a show.
Speaking of The Ultimate Fighter, why can't Dana White just let that thing die?
I don't know, dude. It's like, did they announce a new season?
Oh, he's already talking about they're going to bring it back.
Damn. That's sad.
I know. Sad. Like it's one of these things of, I don't understand Dana White's love affair with The Ultimate Fighter, where it's just, you have seen it, you know, over the last 7 years, the interest goes down and down. I can't tell you, the last season I actively watched was the ATT Black Zillion season.
Yeah, I think so too.
I definitely like watched that. Season 20, maybe?
And you're a Florida guy. I mean, that's why you watched it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Because I knew so many of those guys that were on that show. So that's what drew me in. But since that season, I've had no interest in watching that show. And it just,
I mean, it's
amazing.
It's played out.
Yeah. It's just, but yeah. No, but you're spot on, man. If you could have some type of MMA reality show on Netflix, oh, it would be huge in helping them out. But, you know, getting back to UFC 242, Look, in terms of a pay-per-view, you're buying this card for one reason, one reason only. And that is Khabib and Dustin Poirier. No disrespect to the rest of this card. The rest of the card feels like a fight night card on ESPN+.
With the exception of Barboza versus Paul Felder. Is what I would raise to you. Other than that
would be a main event of one of those ESPN Plus cards. Let's call it like this is, you know, and I do wonder with the UFC, are we kind of, has the UFC just gotten to this point where it's like, you know what, we're just doing cards that are pretty much are generated towards the market that we're in. You look at last week's show in China with how that card played out with who was on it. I mean, you look at this fight card and the Barboza Felder matchup is one matchup on the card. Like, you go, neither one of these guys have really an attraction to this area of the world. So it's like, it's kind of that one fight. It's kind of weird, but like in terms of forking over $60, I'm forking over $60 for the main event. And the rest of it's just kind of, it's a bonus.
Yeah, and it's kind of a missed opportunity. I mean, the fights itself are somewhat interesting, especially if you're an MMA fan, right? Like Islam Makhachev versus Davy Ramos, that's cool. You get to see Makhachev fight. You get to see Curtis Blaydes in action against Shamil Abdurimov. And then Mirbek Taisimov, Carlos Ferreira is a fight that holds a place in my heart. We'll get into that one later. But, you know, these are okay fights. The point I'm kind of getting at, though, is that when you have big events, big time main events, and you have a lot more eyeballs on your product now, with that being said, due to the time difference, maybe those eyeballs will be lessened. But when you do have a lot of eyeballs, my general advice for any MMA promotion is to litter your undercard with potential stars. So when you have a big time audience on a pay-per-view, when they're watching the prelims, they're watching this guy and being like, damn, this guy's a star. Sage Northcutt, I'm going to remember that name, even though he didn't pan out. You know, Conor McGregor, I'm going to remember that name. Like, you put these names when you have the most eyeballs that they begin to care about these developing stars, and that is a missed opportunity with this main card. Barboza, Paul Felder's a great quality fight for sure, but I don't think neither of those two guys will really be a relevant part of the lightweight division in 5 years, unfortunately, for both those guys, just because from an age standpoint. I think I look for youth, or I look for guys that you know can potentially make you money in 5 years, 2 to 3 years, because that to me is a missed opportunity. But again, it is a bit of a weird one because they are catering to that Abu Dhabi area with the time zone and just all the fights. And that to me is not a place I want to be at. Like, it's interesting if you're a fan every occasionally, like once a month, to watch these fight cards that are like, you know, you watch a card in China. A lot of the fighters are from China and whatnot. You kind of get educated about some of the top tier fighters from the country. But when it's again and again and again, it just gets tiresome and people just don't care. I mean, we're talking about a fight card with a solid, you know, the Wikipedia meter. When you look at Wikipedia and see who has profiles.
I had to go to Tapology because I knew everyone had a profile in Tapology.
Yeah, I'm always on Wikipedia. I'm on Wikipedia until I die, man. There's, oh God, I don't even know how to count.
I don't know how to count.
There's six. Six fighters without Wikipedia profiles.
Yeah,
the hell?
Come on, man. That's not shocking.
That isn't shocking, but it's telling.
You know, I also think this card is going to say a lot about, can the UFC do pay-per-views in international markets where, for the United States audience, where we're at, it's a afternoon card. I'll be honest with you. When it comes to this pay-per-view, for me, it'll be on the iPad.
It's not going to be on the big screen.
Oh, come on. We're both going to have the same thing on our big screen on Saturday afternoon.
Yeah, it's college football Saturday.
Clemson versus Texas A&M at 3:30 Eastern time.
Yeah,
that will be the game that will be on the big screen in my house.
And
you know what? And when Khabib and Poirier start, okay, I'll switch. I'll put Poirier and Khabib on the big screen. But yeah, with the rest of the card, yeah, I'll be watching on the iPad.
Yeah, I feel you. I mean, I got to watch Clemson A&M. Because I mean, I went to A&M for 6 weeks, so you know I'm an alum.
I hope it destroys them.
I could, I know you hate Jimbo Fisher. Yeah, I know.
Shambles.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Florida State, Jason, when you look at this card, which fighter do you think is going to perform real well in the first half and then just taper off in the second half?
You know what?
Who's your Florida State pick of the week?
You know, I will tell you, for the first 12 minutes of that game, I was like, I literally text my brother and go, FSU's back, baby. We're back. And then I have been working on a NFL broadcast since 2006. I can't ever recall seeing a game where one team ran 100 plays.
Yeah.
Like, it's crazy. Like, I had to laugh, like, you know, Willie is going, you know, I think dehydration played into it. No, Willie, your defense was on the field for 100 plays. That's why you lost.
Yeah. That's it. You don't prepare for 100 plays. I mean, it's like anything in MMA.
But if I was going to pick a fight, Daniel?
Curse Blades.
Blades, Abdurrahimov. One of those guys gets off to a great start and fades. It's heavyweight MMA. But look, that fight smells of me. Just Curtis Blades takes him down and just beats him up on the ground.
I bet that fight just straight up smells. I bet I wouldn't want to be in between those two big heavyweights, man. That's probably a smelly situation. I think Blades wins it big time.
I will tell you the prelim fight that interests me the most is Calderwood versus Lee.
What interests you about that one?
Well, I mean, the importance that has on that division. I was kind of surprised to see how big of a favorite Andrea Lee is in that fight. You know, JoJo, I mean, look, she's tough and she's going to give Andrea Lee all she can handle. I mean, it's a huge fight for Andrea Lee in terms of her place in that 125 pound division. That, like, you know, Bilal Muhammad against Sato, that's another one that I like. You know, I think could be a nice little fun fight. But those are the two fights on the prelims that stick out to me that interest me.
Yeah. I mean, you know, the one thing is, the Calderwood Lee fight is absolutely a great pick, and honestly, Calderwood would be the underdog on this entire card that really excites me, that I think has the best chance of pulling off an upset I think, you know, Lee's really had a lot of success in the UFC, but I would say there's a pretty big gap between her wins and Calderwood's talent level. Calderwood's battle tested. I think she's ready to potentially make a run here. Great, pretty solid stand-up, as is Lee, and I think it's going to be a well-action fight, but Calderwood would be my upset pick. And then the fight that interests me the most, I guess before I get into that, I just want to mention a fighter that interests me the most on the prelims, or just on the non-main event, co-main event spot. Otman Azatar from Germany, undefeated, favorite lightweight going up against Timo Pakkalin. I think Azatar's a name to watch as he makes his UFC debut. And then in terms of the non-main event, co-main event fight that interests me the most, I would go with Mirbak Taisimov versus Carlos Diego Ferreira for me. It's a lightweight fight. And number one reason why this interests me the most is Ferreira's from my area, the Rio Grande Valley. He's from far Texas. So for him to have any degree of success is incredibly exciting for me personally. And he started to piece things together. I mean, I remember when I first heard that he was from my area, I was like, hell yeah. And then he proceeded to lose back-to-back fights. Now, those losses look a lot better. I mean, they're to Benil Dariush and Dustin Poirier. And he's gone on to win four in a row with a win over Khabilov. And now he's taking on a tough opponent in Mirbak Taisimov. Unfortunately for Carlos, I don't want him to come over and beat me up. But I think he's going to lose his fight against Taisimov, who's a pretty heavy favorite. But I do think Ferreira versus Taisimov, even if I wasn't from the Valley, I would still look forward to it. Because I think there's potential for it to be exciting. And it's a matchup between two talented lightweights.
You know, but of course, it's all about that main event of Khabib and Nurmagomedov and Dustin Poirier. And I tweeted about this, and me and you were texting about it earlier this week. As I was kind of looking at Dustin Poirier, the one thing, when you look at his resume, that really sticks out is the lack of wrestlers on his resume. I mean, let's just look at these are all of his UFC fights, which of course you go back all the way to 2011 when he stepped up on short notice, take on Josh Crispy. Then it was Jason Young, Pablo Garza, Max Holloway, Chan Sung Jung, Jonathan Brookins, Cub Swanson, Eric Koch, Diego Brandao, Akira Korasani, Conor McGregor, Diego Fajea, Yancy Medeiros, Joe Duffy, Bobby Green, Michael Johnson, Jim Miller, Eddie Alvarez, Anthony Pettis, Justin Gaethje, Eddie Alvarez again, Max Holloway again, now Khabib Nurmagomedov. Now, look, no one has the type of grappling that Khabib Nurmagomedov has, but that was one thing just in looking at Poirier that really stuck out to me is the lack of wrestlers he has faced in the UFC, because, you know, we always talk about what's the path to victory. I mean, to me, the path to victory for Dustin Poirier is he has to keep this fight on the feet.
Mm-hmm. That's his path to victory, his most likely path to victory. And I just had like a galaxy brain thought. Okay. So Dana White hates wrestlers. He hates guys who do takedowns and stuff. So he never, like, they never sign wrestlers if you wrestle and you're boring and stuff. Like, they'll kick you out of the UFC. So what if that gives all these fighters little experience against wrestlers so that the few elite wrestlers that make it in the UFC are like always going to be the champion because everyone else doesn't have experience against wrestlers? That is my galaxy brain thought, that Dana White's disdain for wrestlers will lead to all of his champions being wrestlers. That's my galaxy brain thought. Look, Dustin's going up against wrestlers. The problem is it's in training camp. It's not in the bright lights. He's probably not going up against someone at Khabib's level. I mean, I'm sure they brought in the best wrestlers for his training camp, but it's just a whole different ballgame. And you bring up a great point in his lack of experience. And at the end of the day, Khabib is putting together one hell of a run. If Nurmagomedov maintains this for five more fights, this dude could find himself being known as the best fighter of all time. Mm-hmm. Like it's going to take, well, it might take a little more than five more fights, actually. You know, he is 27-0, but the truly elite wins are, there's like two of them, to be honest with you. And then there's a couple of good ones. So Nurmagomedov's got to do this for a while, but he's definitely on the highway. He's on the expressway to legend status. And there's a chance that he could really hold on to this title for a very long time. Because the thing about Nurmagomedov is he has just brought a very unique perspective on wrestling. This dude will get you down no matter what. He is ferocious. And not only that, Jason, you talked about Dustin Poirier's path to victory being the defending the takedown. Even if he defends the takedown, Nurmagomedov has shown he's an overwhelming striker. Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the one thing about Khabib is you kind of wonder where would he be in his career right now if he didn't have all those injuries between 2014 and 2016. How much, what, you know, where would he be at now as opposed to where he is at? I mean, you know, one of the things, and I'll throw this question out to you here because we were kind of debating on this text, and I've actually asked a couple other people the same exact question. They all kind of had the same mindset of, man, it's a really good question. What would surprise us more? Dustin Poirier wins the title on Saturday, or Khabib wins with no takedowns?
I think the answer is Dustin Poirier wins the title. Because again, and this is a good question. At first you think, oh, well, I mean, Khabib wins without takedowns because then it's going to be in Poirier's favor. But Khabib's striking is top shelf. It's not unrealistic to think that he gets the better of the striking against Poirier.
Dude, you look at the improvements in his striking. You know, he really, you know, the eye quintified in the last, you know, 2-3 rounds that basically he used it as a way to work on his striking. And then obviously we saw improvements in his striking in his fight against Conor McGregor. You know, I think one of the things, I was going back and watching that fight against Conor earlier this week, and I think for Dustin, you got to imagine the game plan has got to be pressure, you know, get right in Khabib's face. But, you know, we know where Dustin Poirier trains. We know who his head coach is. What's the odds he's been working with Jorge Masvidal on a little flying knee to start the fight?
That would make the internet explode.
Would then we just be like the American Top Team flying knee?
Yeah, I mean, that would make the internet explode. I mean, here's the thing about Poirier and why you can't count him out, even though I'm going in this, you know, really talking about Nurmagomedov, is Poirier is 100% a supreme talent right now. I mean, he is peaking. With that performance against Max Holloway, after the performance against Eddie Alvarez, after the performance against Justin Gaethje, after the performance against Anthony Pettis, you're talking about quality wins, and a lot of them where he looked really, really, really good against some of the best guys in the division. So Poirier is absolutely supremely talented. He's a dangerous dog here, and dangerous is the key word. To me, that's how he fights. He has great fighting spirit in that he is always dangerous with his submissions or his ability to finish fights with strikes quickly. Even when he's down on the scorecards, he has that resolve. And he has the ability and the diversity in his attack to finish the fight at any given point. So that's kind of why Poirier's a live dog, and you can't discount something like a flying knee or a triangle choke or a rear naked or an elbow that finds the right spot. So absolutely, Poirier, he's a live dog here. I'm not going to pick him against Nurmagomedov because it just seems too obvious for why you got to pick Nurmagomedov, because of the wrestling. You know, and the wrestling, again, opens up the stand-up for Nurmagomedov because Poirier's got to worry about the takedowns, opens up the striking defense, Khabib counters. But again, a guy in a fight can always get countered, and we see it time and again. And, you know, maybe it's just not Khabib's night.
Now, we all know that is expected to win this fight will defend their title against Tony Ferguson. But I did see this just awesome tweet last night from at McMally MMA. He goes, LOL at everyone picking Khabib. What expert MMA analyzers are failing to realize is that the MMA gods have cursed us and forbidden us from ever seeing Tony versus Khabib. And with Khabib saying Tony is next in line, the only way this fight turns out is Dustin by TKO.
Yeah.
I wish I would have thought of that, but like, yeah, it's kind of spot on. Don't tempt the MMA gods. Don't tempt them.
Yeah, we'll get to you later, Bellator. yeah, that's too funny. And God, I hope we get it. There's nothing I like more than spotting the MMA gods, but that one seems like set in stone that we won't ever get Khabib Tony. But I hope we do.
I've seen a lot of people pick Dustin. I just can't do it. I just think that what Khabib is going to do is I think he's going to put Poirier against the fence, and he's just going to, you know, go for a single leg. He's going to work his way down. I just think he's just going to grind out Dustin Poirier, and I think that we see a stoppage, I would say, in the third or fourth round.
Okay. I think I'm on the same wavelength with you in terms of how this fight's going to play out. I think this goes the distance, and Nurmagomedov wins a clear decision due to his wrestling.
Yeah. Now, here's the only question. Do you think Dustin Poirier wins a round?
Yeah. I'll give him a round. I don't know which one, but maybe he drops Nurmagomedov. I mean, in a 5-round fight, I'll give Dustin Poirier a round.
Like, here's what I wonder. Who's the UFC? Who they prefer win this fight? It's got to be Khabib, right?
100%. I mean, the fight's in Abu Dhabi.
But it seems like Dustin Poirier is a guy that has been counted out so many times in his career, and he just continues to prove people wrong.
That's been the story of his run lately. I mean, he hasn't been the A side of a lot of these fights where he's gone out and won. And so maybe this is just another time when that happens. I mean, this is a great fight, and I'm looking forward to it. And again, Poirier is an unbelievable talent, and he's the perfect fighter to root for if you want to see Khabib falter, because he's one of the guys who's going to give Khabib one of the best fights of his career.
We mentioned about Paul Felder and Edson Barboza rematch, their first fight taking place back in 2015, which was a Barboza decision victory. You know, Barboza now training down an American Top Team. You know, this is a fight that, you know, I expect it to be a stand up fight. I don't really, you know, I think if there is a ground aspect of this, I think it's Paul Felder initiates that aspect, but this should be a fun fight to watch.
Yeah, I think it'll be a tremendous fight to watch. Absolutely. I mean, Barboza is must see TV every time he performs, and I think he loses this fight. He's just in a real, real bad slump, even though he has the previous win over Felder. And if this is a stand-up fight, I think you got to favor Barboza's leg kicks. They're just too brutal. I think currently, when you look at the trajectory of both fighters, Felder is more or less peaking, whereas Barboza's on the downward slope, which is why my pick is Felder.
Yeah, but you know, for me, it's all about the main event. You know, that's what's drawing me to this fight card. And I hope the UFC's not setting a bad trend with this, because this was always what they said they would never be. And they're quietly turning into this. And I think it's ultimately a product of they're just trying to put on so many events a year that, you know, we're not always seeing the pay-per-view quality that we want.
Yeah, man. Oversaturation has been a problem with the UFC for literally 7 years, and it's not getting better. I mean, it's absolutely going to hurt this sport at a oversaturation is the bane of like sports entertainment type sports. You give too much of your product, people stop caring. Oversaturation kills prize fighting, and it's definitely hurt the UFC big time, because at the end of the day, all your casual fans are what make the magic happen. Mm-hmm. And when you have too many events and they get overwhelmed and they can't figure out who's who and what's what and what matters, that's when you have less stars, you know? So, yeah, I mean, oversaturation is absolutely – you get greedy because you want more money, but it's killing the sport.
Yeah, it is. And but looking forward to watching UFC 242 on Saturday afternoon. Should be noted that, you know, if you're looking to go out and watch this event, sports bars will have access to show this one at 2 p.m., obviously, if they pay for it. But it also will be played at 10 p.m. Eastern time later on that night. So maybe if you missed the live version – and you know your favorite you know sports bar is going to be showing the event that we'll have it later on that night. But coming up next, it is the interview portion of the show. You're gonna hear my conversation with Peter Barrett, TJ Brown, and Adam Borax. But first up, I want to let you know about one of our sponsors, Roman. Guys, we are terrible at taking care of our health, whether it's a knee injury, back injury, or something worse. We are usually more comfortable just rubbing some dirt on it than seeing a doctor. Look, I'm as guilty of it as myself. I don't necessarily want to go see the doctor, but it is something that we just have to do. And the same is true for erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to chat with a doctor online.
I'm telling you guys, with Roman, you can get medical care for ED, if appropriate, from the comfort and privacy of your own home. You can handle everything online in a convenient, discreet manner. Getting started is simple, guys. Just do us a favor. Go to GetRoman.com/MMA Report. The website is GetRoman.com/MMA Report. and complete an online visit. If your doctor decides the treatment would be appropriate, they can prescribe genuine medication that can be delivered in discreet packaging right to your door. Get this, with free two-day shipping. Guys, go talk to the doctor. Erectile dysfunction can be tough to tackle, but it's really important to get checked out. And with Roman, it's easy to connect with a doctor.
As Daniel said, all you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAreport to get a free online visit and free two-day shipping. That's GetRoman.com/MMAreport for a free visit to get started. GetRoman.com/MMAreport, and we appreciate their support of the MMA Report podcast. But now it is time for the interview portion of the show. Up first, you're going to hear my conversation with Peter Barrett, who's coming off that win on the Contender Series to secure a UFC contract. In this interview, you're actually going to hear the UFC already offered him an opponent, but he did turn it down. He explains why he turned it down. Then you're going to hear TJ Brown, who also secured a UFC contract on the Contender Series. Had a chance to talk with him. And then finally, you're going to hear my conversation with Adam Borax, who is going to be one of the men to kick off the Bellator Featherweight Grand Prix this weekend as he takes on Pat Curran. So here's my conversation with Peter Barrett, TJ Brown, and Adam Borax. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man now a UFC fighter following his win on Dana White's Contender Series, Peter Barrett. Peter, man, congratulations on the victory. Congratulations on getting the contract. You know, the last 14 months, you know, obviously you went through a stretch where, man, it wasn't a good stretch. If we were talking 14 months ago after that Conor Berry fight, and I said, 14 months from now, you'll be in the UFC, what would you have said to me?
I would have told you you're full of shit. You know, definitely. I mean, it's really hard to believe, considering what I've been through, that I've made it. You know, and what I just keep telling people is this is the beginning. You know, I've got 13 fights under my belt as a pro, 7 to 10 before that as an amateur, but this is just the beginning. And I've probably got 2 or 3 years in me to make a solid run in the UFC and just hold on tight and let's go for a ride.
When you think about the last 2 months, you know, last time we talked prior to this fight, you talked about how, you know, Mark Del Grotte was kind of the key guy in helping putting this fight together, where you're out there, you know, supporting, you know, one of your fellow fighters out there, and you introduce yourself, Sean Shelby, you know, just kind of give that formal introduction. How would you describe the last 2 months?
You know, it's really like my situation is almost, you know, like a case study you read in a book and you're like, bullshit, that didn't happen. Like, they just made that up. There's no way in hell this kid turned everything around and was able to put himself in the UFC with the help of others, considering what he just went through, what he's going through, and what his record looks like. You know, it's just, it's incredible. You know, I mean, some of the information that I've been reading that really stands out, that goes right in par with this, is Dr. Joe Dispenza's, you know, you are the placebo, or breaking the habit of being yourself. And what he talks about in those books has been incredibly useful and exactly what propelled me into the UFC.
I think, and obviously seeing your Facebook page, and so many people have tagged you since this, I think the one video that really stuck out to me was your brother Max and him watching the fight with you. I mean, was there a particular Facebook message that you saw that just really stuck out to you?
No, not really. I mean, I've been getting so much feedback from so many people that are just, you know, happy that there's someone out there speaking about depression and battling it and coming back without medication and accomplishing these feats. And I mean, you know, Max was the first one I FaceTimed in the back room before I went to go sit in the stools and whatnot. And him and his wife were watching the Contender, and I made him go get my dog so I could see my dog, because it had been a few days since I'd seen her. So that was definitely a fun message or a fun call to have. But I mean, there's just been so much outpouring of support and people that resonated with my story that are thanking me for putting a face to something like that and getting out there and talking about it. So I don't want to give, like, you know, a special nod to one over the other, but there's just been so much love and outpouring support from everyone.
You know, obviously the fight, it's a tough fight, grinding fight between, you know, both you and your opponent. Third round, was it one of those things of like, okay, I know this fight's close, I just got to kind of, just be the more of a pressure fighter here to kind of, you know, win the judges over?
Yeah, I mean, I really wanted to knock him out, and I just got so frustrated in the first round. I did get frustrated in the first round, but what really frustrated me is how burnt out my arms got. And I was like, I remember being in there, like, work the jab, and I'm like, this jab's not working. Like, this doesn't work. It's not snapping. My arms were loaded with blood, lactic acid. They were fighting me to fight, you know. And that's where I had to really focus on the wrestling, be the pressure, look for little shots, you know, constantly working knees on his thighs, stomping on the foot, elbows up the clinch. And it was really just, it really made me rely on the other aspects of my arsenal that I don't normally have to use. You know, I go in there 10-3, 9 finishes, 8 first round finishes, to go and show them that I've got the gas tank to gruel and grind for 15 minutes, I think is as much as I hate to wrestle to win fights. And I like to be a showman. I like to get out there and scrap and be a pugilist. For them to see that I have the gas tank to go 15 hard minutes, I think, you know, whether they realize that then or in the cut of it, like me looking back, that's the biggest thing I've taken away from that victory is it was 15 minutes of grinding, hellish dog fighting that won that fight. And it just let everybody know that I'm not just, you know, a quick finisher. I'm not only in there looking for a round. I can fight for 15 minutes. I can fight for 25 minutes. I'm a workhorse. I don't take anything lightly. My cardio has always been one of my strongest aspects.
You know, I was watching your interview with James Lynch that you did late last week, and you're talking about kind of that moment. You're sitting in the back where you're like, did Dane just give me a contract? Did he not give me a contract? But Lawrence told me to come back. Like, what, you know, we see that moment. You know, there's that big television in front of you, and all of the winning fighters are sitting there. Like, do you remember what was going through your mind as you're sitting there hearing Dana talk about you?
Yeah, I'm like, did he just deliver an underhanded, like, burn? Or was that like a head nod? Like, did I get a contract, or did he just kind of, like, shit on me? Like, Lohan shit on me? I'm not sure. I had to, like, let it sit for a second. But when I heard Lawrence Senko be like, come get your contract, I was like, bing! And I took off running. Like, they were trying to walk me out there. I was like, I just ran to my family, hug and kiss my mom, my girlfriend, my older brother was there, and a bunch of friends in there. Which remind me about that. I'll come back to that because the commentators made some funny comments. But I was just so excited. I was just like overjoyed. I mean, I think overjoyed is a pretty lame way to describe it, but like I was ecstatic. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It was everything that I had worked for, and it was finally coming to fruition.
I'll tell you one of the funny things. I'm sitting here watching the fights on my couch. My wife is next to me doing, you know, work, whatever. And so she sees the t-shirts you had designed for this one. And she just kind of laughed about it. And I was like, I'm like, look, Pete does a great job of this stuff. And she's like, well, that's a really cool shirt he designed. So even for a non-MMA fan, they were like, hey, man, I dig the shirt. I mean, Yeah, man.
So it was a blast, dude. I had so much fun with this shirt, and like this shirt came to me as I was falling asleep. It was like, cause I wasn't sure if I was going to be on the contender or if I was fighting on Cage Titans. And I had spent all the time thinking about a Cage Titans shirt, and I wanted to rip off Burger King and make it say the King of Cage Titans, you know, because there are a lot of people that want to claim that throne, but it's mine. I'm no longer a Cage Titans fighter, but I will forever be the OG Cage Titans King. You know, and that's what I wanted the shirt to be. And then the Krispy Kreme design was in my head. And I'm like, you know what? Abandon Burger King. It'll be too hard. The Krispy Kreme logo is a lot easier to have fun with, like the double bubble one I made last time. Just a very iconic logo that people will recognize, and they'll have to think twice about when they look at it and realize it doesn't say Krispy Kreme. So that just draws people into it naturally. You know, it's just, that's like one of the more fun things I do with fighting is definitely the tees.
Could t-shirt design be like post fighting for you?
Oh, of course. I mean, I've like even my very, very first walkout shirt was for me and my brother. It was a spin on the Warriors shirt where they're all sitting in the middle of the park with the one guy in the middle and that iconic Warriors, you know, mm-hmm. frame. Like that was the first one I started playing with, and then it's a lot of fun to rip other people's designs off and make them more interesting. the question then becomes, when do I show up on their radar and start getting cease and desist letters? You know, I can fly under the radar pretty well with just walkout shirts, but as far as like moving forward with designs, I don't know. But that's always something fun in the back of the head.
Was graphic design something like when you were younger you were into?
No, so the designs are the ideas are mine, and then I sit down with Mike Pulver, and he's because he does all of his own media and marketing, he's become very handy at Photoshop. So we sit down for about 45 minutes, run through something, play with the logos, try to find the right fonts and just rebuild them from the ground up, you know. So he's been a big asset in that respect. I mean, like my Joker shirts that I had done previously, those were done by Badass, and they had a graphic design guy that I just pretty much advocated what I wanted, and he would come up with the designs. But now that me and Mike are doing them together, it's more one-on-one work with the shirts, and we just try to make them look as good and as fun as possible.
But of course now, I mean, I'm sure everything is about October 18th of kind of waiting to see maybe if there's going to be a opponent for that card. I mean, is that just like bucket list item, like number one for you is October 18th TD Garden?
Yeah, definitely would be a blast to make my UFC debut in Boston in the Garden with my whole fan base able to come out and check it out. But we haven't really gotten much back from them. I know they wanted like the night of the fight. So like, hey, do you want to fight Ricardo Lamas? I'm like, no, I don't want fucking Ricardo Lamas as my debut fight into the UFC. Like, well, let's take a couple rings down and you know, get a smart fight. Like, I'm not just gonna, you know, bite at any name, but that was the one name that they were trying to match for that card. So we'll see what they come back with. If they can come back with, you know, someone, you know, like another contender winner or someone in my position or someone they're trying to cut, I think that would be a good debut fight. You know, someone on their way out, someone in the very same, you know, level on the ladder. But to come out the gate looking for top 25 guys in the world, I think, you know, that's what I have management for, to prevent me from doing things like that and just taking whatever's offered.
But it's definitely 45, not 55.
Yeah, definitely 45. 45 is my home. I think I've been fighting at 55 because it's been super easy. It's been cutting 3 or 4 pounds the night before weigh-ins, and obviously being disciplined on the diet. But my whole last fight camp, before I even got the notification or the nod to fight in the contender, my weight never really went above 165 pounds, you know, and I've been doing a really good job keeping my weight between 160, 165. So I think a 15 to 20 pound cut isn't that big of a deal to go to back to 45. And it's like, I've got it down to a science. My rehydration, my replenishment is great. You know, about 10 pounds, 15 pounds. I think I fought fight night at 160, between 165 and 170. I wasn't that big. I wasn't that slow. Because I think that's another thing people don't think about. They're like, oh, I want to put on as much weight as possible before I get in the cage. But if my body's been moving at 165 pounds for the last 8 weeks, why would I think that my body's going to move the same way at 175 pounds?
Yeah.
It's not. The timing's going to be off. The muscles are going to be working harder. My heart's going to be working a little bit harder. It's going to start affecting the cardio, which I think you need to take all of these things into consideration when you're looking to perform at this level. And I don't know if, you know, a lot of people have made that realization full circle. Like, they think, oh, I just want to be as big as possible. Well, if you're moving an extra 10 pounds after cutting 20 pounds, your body's going to be heavily taxed, and it's going to overwork to do that. And you're not going to have the same performance that you would if you were 10 pounds lighter. So I think everything going into it, 145 is definitely my home. I'm going to get down there. I'm going to start bruising people up, start banging people out, start knocking people out. Reminding people why I have heavy hands, that I have heavy hands, that I've been putting people away at 145 for the last few years, and now I get to do it on the national level and win $50,000 every time I do it.
And we look forward to seeing when the official UFC debut is going to take place. Pete, man, as always, I appreciate time. Of course, let everyone know where they can find you on social media. If they want to buy a shirt from you, how can they do that, man?
Hell yeah. So get at me on SlipperyPete145 on Instagram. That's where I do most of my interactions on the social media. And then also Slippery Pete or Peter Barrett on Facebook. Any three of those venues is a good way to get a hold of me. I've got stocks of old shirts that I'm shipping out. I'm shipping out the Krispy Kreme ones now. I'm shipping out double bubbles. So The remaining inventory will be up posted soon, and I'll probably run it through my eBay to make it a lot easier so it's not in Venmo transactions, this and that. So follow me on Instagram, Slippery Pete 145.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is a man who scored a UFC contract last week on the season finale of Dana White's Contender Series, TJ Brown, as he got the win over Dylan Lockhart. Third round submission. TJ, congratulations on getting the contract. Talk to me a little bit about that opening round. I mean, obviously Dylan had landed some good shots on you. What was the mindset, you know, heading into the first round and then heading into the second round?
Yeah, so first of all, man, thank you guys for having me, man. I appreciate the opportunity to get on here and talk with you. Oh, man, it was really an emotional roller coaster. I was just sitting here talking to some of the guys from the gym. I was like, man, it was such a drama show. You know, there were so many ups and downs and emotional roller coasters watching that fight. And I was like, yeah, imagine being in there. But, yeah, you know, I was going in there looking to establish my striking. You know, I feel like I had the superior striking. But MMA being the game it is, I'm the one to end up getting called. And I just think it says a lot about me being able to deal with adversity, you know, being dropped there in the first round and then keeping my composure and just kind of really fighting that whole first round in autopilot. And then going into my corner, you know, I'm lucky to have good coaches, man. My coach, Rolo Delgado, was able to keep my head in the game, man, keep my focus. And we put together a game plan that allowed us to come back and get the victory.
I mean, it's one of those things after the first round, you're like, man, crap, I got to forget about those 5 minutes and I got to move passing ASAP.
Yes,
we just got to worry about this last 10 minutes. And I mean, of course, you get the submission there in the third round. You know, once you got that submission locked in, you win. Were you already thinking like, okay, I think this has got me the contract? Or were you kind of like, man, I got to kind of see how the rest of this night plays out?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, it was unlike any other experience, you know, being on the Contender Series. You know, I had this sense, after I won, I had a sense of, man, I was excited, but I just wasn't ready to celebrate yet. You know, I thought I had a great case for, again, coming back from adversity, showing the heart, showing the dog, you know. And again, I think I was the only finish of the night. So I knew that carried value, but, you know, you just never know what to think. And then not to mention how Dana White was kind of explaining it, and he was, before he gave me the contract, he had me had weak knees, man, the way he was explaining everything, you know, kind of had me fooled.
You know, they always talk about the, you know, I've talked to so many guys who've been on the Contender Series, and like, man, it's a weird scene, just because there's not really a crowd. I mean, there is a little bit of a crowd, but you know, sure, you can clearly hear what your coaches are saying, because, you know, it's just right, not a loud environment. Was it a weird scene for you to be fighting in that?
Yeah, so the only time it really, really caught my attention was the walkout. So on the walkout, you see your music playing, the crowd's cheering, you know, lights, everything. It's not like that. There's no music. So I remember just walking to the cage thinking, man, this is different, you know. But I try to just keep myself together, keep my composure, and handle business. But I could definitely notice it on the walkout.
The last 6 months of your career, I mean, four fights. Obviously, everything's gone great for you. How would you describe the last 6 months of your career?
Man, I said it in January, and I remember my Muay Thai coach reminded me of the day. It was like, we said this is my year, you know, and I believed it. But man, it's really, I mean, I really believe it's coming true, man. I'm on a 6-fight, you know, winning streak, including my boxing and kickboxing. Man, I haven't lost a fight this year, man. I'm on top of the world. I'm really making a run, and I really believe this is my year, and I'm not done. This year's not over, man. I'm ready to put together some more wins.
Yeah, I think a lot of guys would love to be in your position, potentially having 5 fights in 1 year.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of guys love that, but, you know, part of you and the team there thinking of, okay, let's not try to jump right immediately into the fight. Let's make sure that we've got a good, you know, 6-8 week camp.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And realistically, I think we could probably fit one more in this year. And also, I'm a little banged up from this fight, so my coaches are telling me I should take a little time, rest up, get my body to 100%, and then let's take a smart fight, like you said.
Is that tough for you to sit back and kind of like, hey, let me you know prepare my body in a way, because that fighter mindset, you're like, man, I want to fight next weekend.
Man, I really do, and my life's better when I'm training and competing, mm-hmm. And I have some goals set, you know. So it's good for me to stay busy, but luckily I'm a coach here at West Haven May. I'm able to spend some time coaching some of the other fighters, coaching some of the adults, and in the kids program as well. So I'm just keeping myself busy in the gym.
What was it like coming back to the gym after you won the contract?
Ooh, man. You know, I really love the positive energy it's able to bring into the gym. Everybody in the gym is pretty excited and pumped up about it. You know, everybody seems to be training hard and getting after it. So I'm just glad to bring some good vibes back to the gym and to ride some of the wave myself.
You know, obviously Arkansas is a state that we've not seen a ton of fighters come out of and come into the UFC. Would you say an Arkansas fighter has a certain – is there a certain type of fighter that comes out of Arkansas that maybe we just haven't had a chance to see because we haven't seen many fighters on the national scene?
Well, you know, I think this is the beginning. Yeah, I think this is the beginning, man. I think a few of us are carrying a chip on our shoulder, got a little pride in us, and ready to show the world really how good we are, man. You know, I'm not saying we have the huge mega camps here, but there is some talent here that is fixing to be exposed, and I want to be one of the ones that leads the way.
How'd you get the nickname Downtown?
Man, so boxing, there's a lot of boxing here in Little Rock, you know, and here in Arkansas in general. And we had this female boxer here, Kim Hamby, great female boxer. She just said it one day. She was like, "What's up, Downtown, TJ Brown?" And so it just kind of stuck since then, man.
Did you like the nickname from the start?
Yeah, man. It's got to get a little ring to it, wouldn't you say?
It does. It does. Was there any other nicknames that maybe the guys in the gym had called you prior to that?
Man, not really.
Because nicknames is one of those things. You can't give yourself a nickname. Someone has to give it to you.
No way. Yeah. So, yeah, when she said that, it kind of stuck, man. So I think we're going to stick with it.
Obviously, fans can go on YouTube and they can see your fights. They can go on ESPN Plus and watch your Contender Series fights. What would you want the UFC fan to know about you, whether it's you as a person or as a fighter?
Yeah, well, you know, just honestly, man, I see myself as one of the good guys, man. I'm a family man. I have a 7-year-old son, man. That's where all my time goes outside of this gym. You know, being a father, you know, I growing up not having a father, it was a big deal for me to set a good example for my son. And just being the full-time father that I am, that's what I do. And I'm a family man. I take care of my two brothers as well. I'm just one of the good guys, man. You're not going to catch me out talking much of trash and trying to get publicity off stuff like that. But I am a good guy. I'm somebody you can tell your son to look up to and know that I'm going to go out there and get the job done and do it in the right fashion.
So it's a Saturday afternoon. You and your son are going to go do something together. What is it?
Man, so this last Saturday we went to there's a retrocade here, actually, like an old school game room, okay. Like got all the old arcades, and he enjoys that, and I got a cool feel for it too. So yeah, that's one of the things we do. And outdoors too. Here in Arkansas, you can do a lot of outdoors, from fishing to hunting, hiking. We try to do a little bit of that too.
Are you a big video game player?
Man, I was growing up. You know, now I don't have a lot of time for it. But, you know, when I can, we'll sneak off over there and play. But, yeah, I played a lot growing up, for sure, actually.
When you went to the arcade, was there a game that you, like, walked in, you saw, like, oh, damn, I remember playing this when I was a kid?
Yeah. You know, of course, like the Mortal Kombat, mm-hmm. Street Fighter, of course, you know. Those are some classics.
Yeah, I live in Tampa, Florida, and we've got a couple of those. Like, there's one place that you pay like 10, 15 bucks to get in, and it's all you can play.
Yeah, that's same here, man. It's such a good gig.
Yeah, it's like the big trend going around is now the arcade bars. I mean, I get the chance to travel the country, and you see a lot of those, you know, what's called a bar arcade. You see them all over the place. You know, it's really cool, you know. Usually if I can have little cocktails with it, always helps out a little bit too.
Hey, it does, 100%.
But in terms of when would you like that next fight to be? I mean, is it all about right opportunity?
So if I had a choice, you know, my teammate Bryce Mitchell, he's fighting on the DC Washington DC card. Mm-hmm. So that would be a great card if they could get us both on there. That way we're both in the gym, being able to train together, and that'd be a great opportunity for us both to be on the same card and kind of showcase our skills together.
And we look forward to seeing when that may take place. TJ, man, I really appreciate the time. Congratulations on getting that UFC contract. Of course, let everyone know they can follow you on social media. If there's anybody else you want to shout out, the floor is yours.
Yeah, I just want to give a shout out to my gym, Westside MMA, and my strength condition coach, Raw Strength and Speed. You guys can follow me at Downtown TJ Brown on Instagram or Facebook TJ Brown. Man, thanks again for having me, man. You got a great show, man, and I'm glad to have the opportunity to be on here, man.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report is one of the men that's going to be in the featherweight tournament that kicks off here at Bellator 226, Adam Borax, as he takes on Pat Kern. Adam, I appreciate the time. Obviously, you know, Scott Coker talked about how this tournament kind of came together. When you learn it's Pat Kern is the name for you in the opening round, do you remember what your initial thought was?
I was so happy for him. You know, it's a good matchup for me. He's good everywhere. He's a nice guy. He don't use the trash talk, so I like this matchup.
Why do you like the matchup?
Because, you know, I want to fight against the tough guys, and he's a former champion. So, yeah, I want to fight against the tough guys.
You know, one of the things that when everyone's looking at the field and everyone's going to talk about, you know, who they think is their favorite, you know, and then they'll say, well, hey, who's the under the radar pick that no one maybe is thinking about? And it seems to be you're the name that comes up as the under the radar pick. Do you like that? Or do you kind of feel like, man, people are undervaluing me when they're saying under the radar?
No, I don't care about, you know, so I'm just focused on my fight and on my training and that's it. I want to be just better fighter every day. So if the people I know me or not, oh, of course, it's good feeling when I, you know, for example, I go back to Hungary and everybody knows me. I went everywhere last time. Everybody was like, oh, can I take a picture or something? It was good feeling. But, you know, the most important thing is I want to be a world champion.
Did the flying knee knockout kind of change your star power in your home country?
Yeah, oh, definitely. Yeah. Now everybody's talking about my knee, and this is a real Hungarian knee, you know. Maybe I'm the flying kid. But, you know, because everybody knows Pico, so it was a good matchup for me too. So I was sure I will win that fight. So I am thankful for this matchup.
You know, the flying knee can be a risk versus reward type thing. And obviously it seems, you know, with what you did and some other fighters have done over the past couple months, it's become a very popular technique. How do you, when you're in the fight, and whether we're talking about a flying knee or something else, how do you decide of whether it's worth a potential risk of maybe if it doesn't land and you find yourself in a bad position?
You know, I am working a lot on my knees with my head coach, Harry Hooft, not just the flying knees. My most weapon is a knee. And for example, against the wrestlers, it's a flying knee. It's a very good technique. I think this year is a flying knees year because everybody throws the knees. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't throw always just the flying knees. Just if I have a distance and when I feel he try to take me down, that time it's like a timing little bit, you know. So I use a lot on the training, but I always stop it. So I don't want to kill my teammates, but yeah, I use a lot my knees.
A moment ago, you mentioned about, you know, getting better as a martial artist. How would you say you're a better martial artist heading into this fight as opposed to the last fight against Aaron?
You know, I think I am better person today now because, you know, I moved to the U.S., I left my family at home and my friends, and my change is my life is changing. So I do every day like a like a machine, you know. I just train, eat, sleep, and yeah, I have a goal every day, just like be better martial artist. So it was my dream before I moved here, just became like a really professional MMA fighter. So you know, it's hard. I live here like 2 years and I changed a lot. I think I grew up now, really.
What do you enjoy the most about living in the United States for your training?
I love the training, only the training. This is my biggest thing here.
And of course, we're all going to see the fight here, coming up here at Bellator 226, taking on the a former champion in Pat Curran. You know, obviously, Pat hasn't been the most active of fighters over the past couple of years, but I mean, look, this guy, he's fought the best of the best inside that Bellator cage. What do you see as what you have to accomplish on fight night to walk away with a victory?
I have to be smart because he has more experience than me, and he's good everywhere. But, you know, I'm younger and I'm hungrier, and I think I will be in better shape than him. And, yeah, this is my biggest advantage. I am younger and hungrier.
Of course, you know, Scott Coker has mentioned about, you know, after this, the first round matches are over, there's going to be a special show to find out who your second round opponent is. Do you kind of like that format, a little bit of the unknown?
Yeah, I like it. I like it. You know, when I was a kid, I watched the Kibon fight, and that was the same. So it's good because, you know, sometimes a lot of people get easy fights, and they are just breathing. But this is really good. That's why I like the tournament rules.
But deep down inside, are you kind of sitting there, man, I hope I get that Pitbull Archuleta winner?
If I get it, I will be happy because it's good. I feel I am ready for everybody. So, yeah, if I get it, it's good. I hope I can get it.
And we look forward to seeing this fight here. Adam, man, as always, appreciate your time and good luck here at Bellator 226.
Thank you, sir.
And there was my conversation with Peter Barrett, TJ Brown, and Adam Borax. Of course, the biggest thing to come out of that interview with Peter Barrett is the fact of the UFC wanted to book him against Ricardo Lamas, and he turned it down. And I like what he said there. He's like, look, you know what? No, I'm not going to come in my first fight in the UFC and want to fight a top 25 guy. I like what he said there because I don't know how many fighters would do that.
Absolutely. That shows a level of maturity and self-awareness that is really, really rare and uncommon among mixed martial artists, Jason.
Yeah, and then, of course, you had TJ Brown, a great conversation with him at the end, talking about, you know, last weekend being at, you know, a retro arcade with his son. And, of course, Adam Borax, who's got a big fight coming up here on Saturday night at Bellator 226. Of course, that is a part of the Bellator Featherweight World Grand Prix. Of course, if you're looking to place a little wager on those fights, you definitely want to check out our friends over at MyBookie. And guys, if you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or keep walking? Of course, you'd take the money. So why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? That's why I tell you to go to MyBookie. It's fast, it's easy, and they pay you when you win. Let's face it, where betting is just as important as who you're betting on.
Look, guys, I wouldn't be telling you to bet with them if they weren't the best. And that's exactly what MyBookie is. It's football season. Bet with MyBookie, man. Look, I saw the University of Houston. They were 23-point dogs last week against Oklahoma, and I knew they would cover. And I was like, hell yeah. And then they started losing by a lot, and I got scared, and I turned off the TV. I woke up, and they covered. They covered the spread. 23 points is too much. Hey, Texas A&M, my Texas A&M, they're plus 17.5. Why are they giving us so many points? We're going to beat Clemson outright. So I'm going to spend all of my birthday money on that. Did you know you could also bet on games after kickoff? Yes, after kickoff, if by the second half it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can always just take the other side. That's what we call a hedge in the business, guys. If you're the kind of guy that likes to bet a little and win a lot, try a parlay. If all your picks come through, you'll multiply your winnings. And no matter how you bet, the NFL season is the best time of the year.
Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Just use the promo code MMAReport to activate the offer. That's promo code MMAReport. Visit MyBookie.ag today. You win, you play, you get paid. MyBookie, of course, you can make a little wager on UFC 242, make a little wager on Bellator 226. Of course, as we're doing this podcast, the odds are not out on Bellator 226, but I'm sure there's going to be something that's going to interest you, so be sure to check out our friends over at MyBookie and use the promo code MMAReport to activate the offer they have for our listeners, which is double your first deposit. But Dan, before we get into Bellator 226, definitely want to talk about what we saw last Saturday in China, UFC Fight Night. I woke up on Saturday morning just as the main event was getting ready to get started. And of course, Zhang Weili, which I guess that's the proper way to pronounce it, not Weili Zhang. She goes out there, only needs 42 seconds to knock out Jessica Andrade to claim the UFC women's strawweight title. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, I've noticed this about our fellow MMA media members. We love to rush to say this fighter can be a star, which made me go, well, what is the definition of a star in mixed martial arts? And I think, you know, Weili Zhang being a star in China right now, I think that's a safe bet. I mean, she is going to be the face of the UFC in China. Is she a star in the United States? No. Maybe she will. Maybe she won't. It's going to depend on how they go out there. But I will tell you, one of the best tweets I got over the last couple of days actually came from JoeDaddy85, where he says, "Can Endeavor please stop with these fake celeb messages to the new UFC champion, Weili Zhang? That's not how you make a star. It's embarrassing." And mentioning Ronda Rousey, Tom Brady, and The Rock. And she may very well be a star, but if I walked into a bar on Saturday, I don't know how many people would be able to know who she is and know what she looks like. And that's not trying to be a knock on her. It was a great performance. She's a very talented fighter, but can we just pump the brakes on whether someone's a star or not?
Yeah, look, if I walked into the Thirsty Monkey bar in McAllen, Texas, Zhang Weili, no one would stop us. Zero people would stop us and be like, oh, I mean, more people might stop me and be like, oh, are you on the MMAReport podcast? Like, I don't know. I'm just kidding. But here's the problem. The problem is, like, Jessica Andrade, who Zhang absolutely destroyed in 42 seconds, wasn't a star either. And this is just a division people don't care about. Now, Zhang Weili has big time potential to be a star, I guess, because the thing is, like, she just ran through Jessica Andrade in 42 seconds. I think there's a real hunger and thirst to see diversity in terms of like a Chinese champion. I mean, that's kind of been something that we've all wondered when it was going to happen. And honestly, we thought it was going to happen in 5 years is what I personally thought, because it didn't seem like the talent level was there. So I think we're down, we're ready. And when you have a champion from a country, if you have a fighter from a country win a championship where they've never won a title before, I think there's real potential to make a star off of that, just because we've seen it before and it's unique and stuff and whatnot. So that's how you can rally behind it. So sure, Zhang Weili has potential. That's what happens when you're one of the best fighters in your weight class. You have potential to be a star. Unfortunately, talent isn't all that you need, and there's a lot of other components, and it's just too difficult to really be certain that she will become one. And yeah, no paid tweets will do it, but I mean, what a hell of a performance by Zhang Weili. I mean, to me, it was the peak right there. The peak may have already happened in her career, because it doesn't get much better than being the challenger, going up against an absolute powerhouse in your home country and taking her title away from her and finishing her in the first round. It literally doesn't get better than that. Like, it doesn't, in this sport, it doesn't get better than being the challenger winning the championship. And Weili got that in her fourth fight in her UFC career, Jason. It's all downhill from here for Zhang Weili. I am sorry, but it does not get better than dethroning Andrade and shocking the world. And that's exactly what Zhang Weili just did. So she should just enjoy the moment.
She needs Joanna Jędrzejczyk to beat Michelle Waterson next month.
No, she needs Watterson to win because she needs to fight Watterson instead of JJ.
No, but I think in terms of...
That seems like a much easier fight,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, but it took help her star power. Even
yeah,
though,
yeah,
I
you're
will
right.
Say,
right.
Joe Daddy made a great suggestion to me about, you know, my definition of star power. You walk into a sports bar, you ask people, you show them names, you show them pictures. Can they pick them out? He's like, man, you should really videotape that. I was like, ooh, that's a good idea. Walk into a bar on Saturday night with the camera crew and just have like 10 fighters. Or actually, no, 5 fighters and 5 fake fighters. How many people would pick out the names? And you got to put like notable UFC fighters.
Mm-hmm.
Like you got to put you can't put Conor McGregor because everyone is going to know Conor McGregor.
You got to put Robert Whittaker. You got to put Robert Whittaker. Or Usman. You got to put, Volkanovski, Alexander Volkanovski on one.
It's a great way to kind of show if a fighter's over with the United States fan.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, the American fighters aren't even over with the United States fans. I mean, there's only about 5 or 6 fighters who I would consider genuine stars. I mean, Khabib, Nate Diaz, Conor McGregor, Cormier, John Jones. I think that's it. Ooh, could have missed a couple.
Would you put I don't know if
I wouldn't put Covington in there.
I wouldn't put Stipe. I mean, even though he's so likable, I just feel
he's
like
a moderate star. Cerruto was ahead of Stipe, I think, barely. Maybe not.
God,
I could be wrong about that.
I want to know who's advising Henry Cejudo on his social media account.
Colby Covington.
It's so bad, man. I mean, it's like as cringeworthy as some of his stuff, it's not. Combat Days America took it to another cringe level. If you saw that Alberto Del Rio, Tito Ortiz in the cage thing. Oh, God.
What was that?
Oh, it was like I saw it yesterday. I guess it was from their event last week. And both of them are in the cage. And it's so bad, man. It's awful. Like, and I'm sitting there and they're teasing about how broadcast details are going to be announced here soon. Like, to me, that screams like they're going to try to do that thing on pay-per-view.
Yeah, I mean, I'm watching this now. Oh, this looks bad. Tito Ortiz versus Alberto Del Rio,
dude,
cringe level.
If I buy Tito Ortiz versus Alberto Del Rio on pay-per-view, someone needs to come have a serious conversation with me.
Got to sit you in a conversation, pull out the credit card bill.
If it's on DAZN, okay, I've already got a subscription to DAZN. I guess I could watch it at that point. But, yeah, man, oh, God, it was so bad. I mean, just... Man, awful. I mean,
yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah. So yeah. I'm surprised you didn't wake up and watch this whole car from China live.
You lost your goddamn mind.
Yeah, man. This card sucked.
I would love to know, if you were not being paid to watch this event, mm-hmm. how many people were up at 3 a.m. East Coast time?
It's got to be 0 people, right?
Now I can see, like, if you're on the West Coast and it's, you know, midnight, and maybe you just got in from the club. Okay. Well, if you're living on the East Coast, oh, man.
Yeah,
you
man.
You are the definition of a hardcore fight fan.
Because these weren't even good fights. Like, were they exciting? Sure. You know, did I enjoy Song Kinan versus Derek Kranz? Okay, I did. I enjoyed Kai Kara France versus Mark De La Rosa. But, man, dude, you were not rewarded. There was, like, 8 decisions on this fight card. Like, and literally, there was only one fight that ended in the first round. Only one fight that ended in the second round. Every other fight went at least 3 rounds.
the biggest surprise on the card, outside of the main event, has to be the co-main event. I did not see that one coming.
Yeah, and it wasn't even – so Li Jingliang finished Alessio Celeski dos Santos. But it wasn't even the fact that he finished – like, this dude dominated this fight. It was his stand-up that was the story of the fight. And his ability to keep the fight where he wanted to. So, I mean, for me, that was a nice little surprise and a good one for him. And yeah, the other big one to me was Kai Kara France defending the wrestling of Mark De La Rosa and outstriking him.
Yeah, but that was UFC China. Of course, we got the UFC on Saturday afternoon. But Saturday night, we got Bellator 226. Look, Khabib Dustin Poirier is by far the most interesting fighter of the weekend. But Bellator 226 is the best fight card of the weekend.
I don't agree. I don't agree, Jason. I disagree wholeheartedly.
Oh, come on.
What, you, dude, when your best fight is Bader versus Czech Congo, I don't care how deep your card is.
I don't know if I was...
I guess the best fight, honest to God, and I guess we're going to rank our featherweight fights. I mean, the best fight, honest to God, is what, Pat Kern versus Adam Borax?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a hell of a fight. That's a hell of a fight. That's the fight I'm looking forward to the second most the entire weekend, honestly.
I mean, look, it's, you know, first off, I think Bellator has done a great job of building up this tournament. You know, it gives you an absolute reason to tune in. Look, Saturday night, I'll probably have some of the fellas over, you know, we'll have some chicken wings. We'll have some cocktails going and we're going to watch these fights, man. I'm looking for, and look, it's a 20 fight card. Prelims, outside of, there's like three fights that jumped out to me. One is Chris Gonzalez, who's 2-0. Bellator's very high on him. Someone to pay attention to. Jake Smith versus Adam Piccolotti. Jake Smith's had a lot of injury issues over the last year. Of course, everyone knows who Adam Piccolotti is. And the other one is Ashley Grimshaw against John Teixeira. Outside of that, it is a California regional show. But when it comes to that main card, I'm all about these four featherweight tournament fights. You know, look, Bader Congo, Scott Coker is just tempting the MMA gods. He is tempting them for Czech Congo to be his heavyweight champion. But when you go out there and you call Ryan Bader the best heavyweight in the world, you just tempted the MMA god, Scott Coker.
And you do it over and over and over again. You are. I mean, that's
like,
the.
I really want to have, like, I would love to have a. And look, and when you talk about this guy's the best at, or this fighter is the best at weight class, it's a pure opinion for the most part. But, like, I would love to see Scott Coker and Dana White debate this. Like, tell me how Ryan Bader, and look, styles make fights, and we talked about, what, 2 weeks ago about this? There's definitely some guys in the heavyweight division you would pick Ryan Bader to beat. But, like, you sit
in the
there
UFC.
And,
in the UFC.
In the UFC.
Yeah.
But you look at Ryan Bader's heavyweight history, and, like, compare it to DC or compare it to Stipe, like, it's not even in comparison.
I mean, a big reason why I picked Ryan Bader to win the heavyweight tournament when he was a part of it was, well, the path to victory is pretty easy. He had to beat King Mo, Matt Mitrione, Fedor Emelianenko.
And the Mitrione fight guys... was god awful.
Mm-hmm.
He wrestled him to death.
And none of those guys would be a part of the top 10 in the UFC.
I was thinking about this earlier this morning. Did Mitrione, was he close to the top 10 at one point?
He had a run where he knocked somebody out. Let me see. What was his best run? His best run had to have been, I guess, so he had two runs in the UFC. He had a 3-fight win streak where he beat Sean Jordan, Derek Lewis, and Gabe Gonzaga, and then he took on Ben Rothwell on a TV show, and then that was his only run. And in that fight, he was the co-main event. He was the, it says on the poster, I can't even read it. Oh, God. Oh, he wasn't ranked for that fight. So Ben Rothwell was, but he wasn't even ranked for that fight. So he may have never been ranked in the UFC top 15, top 10.
Yeah, I mean, it's just like, I mean, look, I'm going to pick Ryan Bader to win, but my gut says pick Czech Congo just because Scott Coker's tempting the MMA gods here. I mean, look, if Czech's going to win this fight, it's going to be a clinch fest against the cage for 25 minutes.
He's going to utilize his frame and just make this fight boring. It's certainly possible, but I just think Bader's a lot more talented. He's really, really fighting at a high. Like, this dude is unbelievable. If he was in the UFC, it would have been interesting to see where he would be at in light heavyweight division, because he seems like one hell of a signing by Bellator.
I wonder how much of Ryan Bader's game plan this one is going to be very similar to King Mo's game plan when he fought Czech Congo. I was there for that fight. It was not an exciting fight. King Mo did what he needed to do to get the win. I wonder if that's ultimately going to play out how he wins this fight. By the way, speaking of Ryan Bader, do you follow Ryan Bader on Twitter?
No, I don't.
Oh, you got to go his Twitter profile, because he likes to play practical jokes on his brother-in-law. And he started, one of the tweets he had was he used hashtag he bangs my sister.
Now I see. I'm going through his Twitter. Yeah, I mean, that's what happens. Oh, man. He spilled a water bottle on the dude's crotch.
Yeah, oh, man. You know how... Oh, God.
Yeah.
But his brother-in-law got him back the other day.
I'm watching this. He's got powder or something in his hand, and he's walking towards it. How the hell are you doing a prank while with your brother-in-law, who's an elite MMA fighter, and he just doused him in powder or flour and then slapped him? How are you going to slap Ryan Bader?
I don't know, man. But look, it's just, you know, I mean, I think the last thing Bellator wants is Chet Collier or heavyweight champion.
Yeah, and I don't think that's going to happen. I think Bader's going to shuck off the clinch attempts and look to land strikes in space. If not, I think he can out-wrestle Congo. So I don't think it's going to happen. You are right, though. They have tented the MMA guys, but I think we leave Bellator 226 with Ryan Bader still having that championship around his waist.
You would think Scott Coker would know this. Like, it's just like, man, you can't tempt these things, man.
Well, he's kind of oblivious sometimes.
Now, in terms of the four featherweight tournaments matchups on this card, which, of course, it's Daniel Strauss versus Derek Campos, Pat Kerner versus Adam Borax, Emmanuel Sanchez versus Taiwan Claxton, Sam Cecilia against Pedro Carvalho. If I'm going to rank them 1 to 4 from the fight that interests me the most to the fight that interests me the least, number one, I would put Pat Kerner, Adam Borax. Number two, I would put Daniel Strauss versus Derek Campos. Three would be Cecilia versus Carvalho. And for Sanchez versus Claxton.
Well, we have very different rankings for sure, man. So we both have the exact same number one. But two, I actually have Claxton versus Sanchez.
Really?
Yeah.
Why is that two for you?
I just think, personally, Derek Campos and Carvalho don't excite me as opponents for Cecilia and Strauss.
I think Carvalho is a little bit of a dark horse in this one.
Wow. So I
think Carvalho's going to win on Saturday.
You think he's going to beat Cecilia? So that's why I'm not into that. But I think Cecilia's going to run through him. But I mean, what's your thought on Carvalho against Cecilia?
I think Carvalho, you know, watching, you know, some of his previous fights, I think he's going to offer a little bit more to Cecilia. I think Cecilia is, you know, he's a very talented fighter. I just think that, you know, kind of his ceiling in this tournament, I think, is kind of limited. I don't know if you know, is his ceiling the quarterfinals?
Yeah, I think it is actually.
You know, I mean, I can't see him get past that, but I think Carvalho and Borax are two guys you gotta be watching. You know, with Taiwan Claxton, man, it's such a huge step up in competition.
It is, and that's what's exciting about it for me, is I fully expect Sanchez to win. But the reason why I have that fight number two is, first and foremost, I like that you're picking Carvalho, but my initial thought is I just thought Cecilia and Strauss were easily going to win their fights. And that's kind of why I had that 3 and 4. Obviously, I could have miscalculated that. And even though Sanchez is my pick against Taiwan Claxton, I'm still excited to see a guy who has really, really high ceiling really get the rug taken out from under him, see how he performs. And I guess that's the case with him. And I think he's probably going to lose, but that's why that's number two. And for number one, yeah, man, I'm riding the Adam Borax wave, man. He looked unbelievable the last time we saw him fight. And I just think this guy just appears to be a star in the making. And I think that's why he's going to be Pat Kerner. He just looks like a talent that I didn't see coming. And then when you look at his resume prior to the fight against Pico, you're like, damn, I should have seen this one coming.
I get the sense people are counting out Pat Kerner.
And it's tough to count on a guy.
Look, I'm probably in that category.
Yeah, me too. I am.
You know, it's just, he's just one of these guys. I mean, you know, the fact is that, you know, a guy like Adam Borax, he might end up facing multiple Bellator champions by the time his term is done. He might fight, if he wins this thing, he probably fights three former champions.
I mean, you have Strauss, you have Kerner, and then the other
Pitbull side, or Archuleta, you know, whoever wins that fight here in a couple weeks.
Yeah, so definitely, and it's a tough test. I mean, the problem for Pat Kerner is, like, he spent so much time away from the cage. The last time he got his hand raised was 2017 due to inactivity. But this was a former champion. The thing that made him so freaking great when he was winning was his defense, his ability to evade and just outpoint opponents. And that could absolutely frustrate a younger opponent who hasn't really been exposed to that type of movement and defense. But that inactivity really leaves room to be outpointed by any opponent. And more importantly, just the inactivity from the cage is why I think it's Borax's time to shine.
So looking forward to Bellator 226 on Saturday night. Of course, that event airs exclusively on DAZN, but of course, there is some other Bellator news items in the news. We'll get to Chris Cyborg here momentarily, but do want to mention, I think it was about 2 weeks ago, I mentioned here on the podcast about how Benson Henderson needed to do a weigh-in 1 month before his scheduled fight here overseas for Bellator, and that did happen last week. He did make weight for that. He needed to make 171 pounds, and the reason he had to do this was because he came in 14% over on his fight day weight for his last fight in California. And of course, the overseas event will be regulated by the Mohegan Tribe Department of Athletic Regulations. And over the past year or so, they've actually recommended two fighters go up in weight, that being Ash Griffiths and Lee Chadwick. Lee Chadwick's actually fighting for Bellator here, you know, momentarily. So that is kind of, you know, the thing we're seeing with MMA with when it comes to weight. Also, Bellator, they announced the main event for Bellator 234 on November the 14th, Daniel. This is an absolute head scratcher to me. Sergey Kharitonov versus Linton Vassell. I don't get this. I don't get this fight booking.
Is it at heavyweight?
Yeah, at heavyweight.
I mean, obviously, right? Yeah.
Vassell moved up the heavyweight in his last fight. He lost. He's lost
three in a row.
Yeah, three in a row. Kharitonov's coming off that win against Mitrione. I just don't. Is this about keeping both guys active? From a divisional rankings aspect, this fight to me makes no sense.
No, it makes zero sense in the world. It reeks of desperation just to get these guys a fight.
Now, of course, the big Bellator news came out on Tuesday is that Chris Cyborg has signed with Bellator, and the press release starts off by saying this: Bellator is proud to announce the signing of Christine Cyborg Justino to the organization. The deal, the largest of its kind in women's MMA history, exclusively secures Cyborg's talents with a multi-year, multi-fight contract. And I want to mention this tweet that I got where it was from Christian Prenup, who used to work for Bellator, where he said, you know, because it was in relation to me saying how many people agree with Scott Coker that Chris Cyborg is the greatest female fighter of all time. Of course, if you listen to this podcast, you know I don't agree with that statement. I believe it is Amanda Nunes. But look, the GOAT conversation, that's a pure opinion thing. And Christian said, love watching her fight, but it's hyperbole. Nunes is, in my opinion. Also, thought I would hope for Viacom's sake. It's not true. Why sign her to the biggest contract in history? The UFC wasn't bidding, so who are they competing with? One, or Ryzen for her services, or just wasting Viacom's money? And you got to completely agree with what Christian said there. And I responded to Christian by saying, you know, my biggest question is, who was Bellator bidding against? If it is true and it's the biggest contract in women's MMA history, that's great for Cyborg. But man, I find this really hard to believe. And I'm just sitting there, it's kind of one of those things of, so you're going out and saying you're paying her more than she was making in the UFC. If the UFC parted ways with you, why?
Yeah. Look, I'm sure they're paying her more than the UFC paid her. But this idea that she's like signed the largest contract in women's MMA history, it reeks of cow feces. I don't think that's true. If that's true, that would be financially irresponsible because they are not generating the same amount of money that the UFC generated off of a Ronda Rousey pay-per-view. Off of a Ronda Rousey pay-per-view, they made a crap load of money, and they could give that money to Ronda Rousey. There is 0% chance that Cyborg is going to get the same amount of money that Ronda Rousey got for her biggest pay-per-views. Now, maybe the wording is what takes care of that caveat. But I mean, really, like, Scott Coker is aware of like every contract. I mean, I don't know. The thing is, there's no transparency with these contracts. It's all BS and malarkey. Yeah. And unless there's no transparency, all we're doing is just saying words. And that's really what Bellator and UFC are so great at, is just saying things in hyperboles and cliches that we can't fact check or double check. I'll tell you right now, Chris Cyborg is not the highest paid female fighter of all time. It's Ronda Rousey. And that's the case. And then Chris Cyborg, to me, is not the GOAT either. She has a hell of a case to be the second best female fighter of all time. But the best female fighter of all time currently holds the UFC Featherweight Championship. Her best win is over Chris Cyborg. And it's absolutely Amanda Nunes. Chris Cyborg, though, probably the second best female fighter of all time, but not the GOAT.
Like, here's the question. And look, as I said, it is the GOAT conversation is a pure opinion thing. What I do believe does hurt Chris Cyborg is the fact of, you know, she's not going to be able to make 135 pounds. So the talent pool of who she can fight is limited. But when you look at the run that Chris Cyborg had from 2008 all the way to that loss against Amanda Nunes in 2018, and you look at the run that Amanda Nunes has been on since 2015 to current, what is the more impressive streak? Obviously, the length, you would say Chris Cyborg, but to me, when you look at the names of who Amanda Nunes has beaten and the fact of she is going out there and stopping majority of these opponents, to me, what Amanda Nunes has done over the last 4 years is greater than what Chris Cyborg did over those 10 years just because of who the opponents are.
100%, yeah. It's like an Alabama schedule over 4 years is a lot more impressive than an Appalachian State schedule over 10 years. It's as simple as that. But you know what? Props to Cyborg. You know, I bet she's going to get a lot of money with this contract, and I think she's put herself in a position where she can win and win and win and win. I just don't think there's a lot of competition out there for her. So she's going to be able to do what she's good at, mixed martial arts, perform at a high level, and get paid. You know, it's a solid day in her book, I think. Because if she did re-sign with the UFC, she would have been put in the cage with Amanda Nunes, and that's not a nice place to be. So, I mean, she got put in – she's in a nice spot, man. She's making her money, and, you know, you devote this much time to the sport, and you deserve it. She certainly deserves the money and the payday. But I would definitely argue that Amanda Nunes is the GOAT.
I think one of the things with Chris Cyborg is with the Viacom-CBS merger is whether or not her next fight's on CBS or if it's on DAZN. I don't think it's on Paramount. I don't see that. I think it's either network television or it's DAZN. You know, one of the things about Cyborg and there's, you know, for the people that are going to consider her the GOAT of all time, no problem with you. Hey, like I said, it's an opinion thing. But I do wonder, is it in the same realm of how people don't want to think there's a better heavyweight than Fedor?
It's the same realm. It's nostalgia. I mean, that's got to be it.
I mean, it's just like and kind of my argument on Amanda Nunes is I'll say, okay, and literally I had a text this morning at 6:30 in the morning. Someone texted me about this. And I said, outside of Holly Holm, what is the best win on Chris Cyborg's resume? Marlos Kunin?
Marlos Kunin would be my pick, but that's a bad second best win. But that would be my pick. And then you ask yourself, what's number three? And it's like Gina Carano. You know, yeah, she didn't fight too many good fighters.
Yeah, but it's as I said, I think what hurts her is the fact that she's not a 135er. If she 100%. Was a 135er, she would have the opportunity to fight. The talent pool is deeper at 135.
Absolutely.
And that's what hurts. I mean, look, they're going to do her versus Julia Budd, and Scott Coker may once again be tempting the MMA gods.
that would be awful for Scott
Julia
Coker.
Julia Budd is the biggest winner of Chris Cyborg coming to Bellator.
Yeah, she is.
Because if she is. I know she just re-signed recently with Bellator, but man, if she goes out there and she beats Chris Cyborg, Julia Budd, fight out your deal.
Mm-hmm.
Fight out your deal.
Jump over the UFC and make some money.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, look, there's a lot of things I don't necessarily agree with Chris Cyborg's social media account, but one of the things that was put out there, which because you really never know if it's coming from her, is that the fact of, hey, you know, what she got here is why you fight out your deal and you see what you're worth.
Yeah. That I agree with wholeheartedly, and the big winner is absolutely the other fighters in the Bellator featherweight division because they just added a big shark to their pool that's going to add a spotlight and create an opportunity to build your stock, and Julia Budd is at the forefront of that.
Yeah, by the way, I was watching Coker's appearance on Ariel's show, and Ariel asked him about the video, you know, the doctor video that Cyborg's team put out there. And Scott's like, yeah, I never saw it. I'm like, Scott, you probably want to go online and see what they did there.
Yeah, because they might do one with you.
Yeah. Ooh, man. Yeah, but I'm looking forward to this weekend's fights. You got LFA on Friday. You also have CES has got a show this week. Invicta's got a one-night tournament coming up this week. So, man, there is a ton of MMA action to take in if you want to take in. Also, it's the start of the NFL season, Daniel. So, going to be a long Sunday for me there, buddy.
Absolutely, man. I'm so excited. I hope you have a good first day back at work. I know you've already been working, but it's way different.
You were already four broadcasts deep.
Yeah, you're right. You already are, but, man, it's different when it's regular season ball. And I'm excited, man. I'm excited.
There's a huge difference between preseason and regular season. Yeah, we play at 4:30 on Sunday afternoon against the 49ers, and we've got a Tim McGraw concert at 2 p.m. before the game, inside the stadium, and then kickoff at 4:30.
That's, I can't think of anything more football than Tim McGraw.
Yeah, so so looking forward to it. Of course, be sure to check out our sponsors, Roman and MyBookie. Of course, Roman is giving you a free online visit and free two-day shipping. All you got to do is go to GetRoman.com/MMAReport. And if you're looking to place a bet on this weekend's fight, you want to check out our friends over at MyBookie.ag. Use the promo code MMAReport to double your first deposit. Of course, you got to use that promo code MMAReport to take advantage of that deal. Do want to thank Peter Barrett, TJ Brown, and Adam Boris coming on this week's edition of the podcast. Myself and Daniel, we'll be back next week. We'll recap everything that happened here at UFC 242 and Bellator 226 and get you ready for next weekend's UFC card.
This is a Landry Football Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
I'm not going to tell you not to overreact to your team's good play or bad play early on. What I will tell you is quit your amateur overreaction as to why, because you don't know. You don't know what's going on. Oh, I talked to somebody who not. No, you talk to somebody that's trying to act like a big shot that doesn't know their head from their ass. I don't know why people go down that path, because, you know, other than the fact they want to act like big shots, they want to act like they know. Look, the obvious is there. You don't feel well, make your assumption of what it is, self-diagnose, that's fine. If it's really significant, probably ought to see a doctor. Need legal advice, you probably ought to see a lawyer. So many people today just try to, you know, get amateur advice and think they know, and everybody thinks there's an expert in football. I've been going to games for 50 years. I don't care how many games you can go into. You're a fan unless you're trained, unless you have an understanding of what it's supposed to look like and how it's supposed to get there, you don't know.
The Landry Football Podcast with veteran scout and coach Chris Landry can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Podcasts, and RadioInfluence.com.